Hi, welcome to the CX Tipping Point podcast. Citizens deserve a government they can trust. This is where we bring together leaders from government and industry to reveal the secrets behind how we're transforming customer and citizen experiences. On the show, we chat with unsung heroes who work behind the scenes to improve the lives of citizens and government employees. We learn from the people who do it and the challenges they face. I'm your host, Martha Doris. Let's do it. Welcome to the CX Tipping Point podcast. Today, we're talking to Nilufer Erdebel, founder and CEO of Spring to Innovation Design Thinking. So welcome to the podcast. So Nilufer is the founder and CEO of Spring to Innovation Design Thinking. She's a leading consultant of innovation and design thinking with expertise in telecommunications, defense, application development, project management, and information technology management. She's worked for General Dynamics, Cross Key Systems, which is now Oracle, and Marconi Wireless, which is now Ericsson, as a software engineer. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on. A pleasure to be here.
Well, it's really going to be an interesting conversation because I know you have a little bit of an accent there. So you're coming to us from Canada, I believe.
That's right. Yeah, I live in and work out of Ottawa in Ontario, Canada.
So that, and it's nice to see that the design work is going on both in, you know, it's going on all over the world. But I know when we connected and started talking about civic design or things that are happening in the government space, it's interesting to share those lessons learned across borders. So why don't we start by just talking about, you know, I mentioned to you, I know enough about design thinking to be dangerous, but I get like the overall, you know, premise. I'm just not down in the weeds enough to like actually do the design part myself. So what is design thinking?
Yeah, that's a great question. Design thinking, from my perspective, is looking at things from an end user perspective. So looking at things from a customer perspective, and in the public sector, that might be citizens, or it might be people in other departments, or people in other government organizations as well, too. So when I think about design thinking, I think of looking at things from a human perspective that includes the whole human being and developing solutions for and with humans. And when we talk about design thinking, a lot of the time we bring up the word empathy. And the reason empathy is brought up is because we want to understand and discover all the different types of end users in there. Oftentimes in organizations, people have different thoughts around and different needs around solutions. And so empathizing and understanding things from their perspective really helps us understand the whole problem. And what I love about design thinking is once people learn about it and start doing it, it's hard for them to go back. And design thinking helps open up their mindset to different types of other opportunities and solutions that they might not have. When people normally see design thinking online or see presentations around it, they'll notice that it has traditionally five phases to it. So the empathize phase, where you're unpacking and understanding your end users, you're developing personas, empathy maps, and journey maps. The second phase is really from the empathize component of it, understanding what is the problem that you're trying to solve from all of the different perspectives. And then the third phase is ideation, so coming up with ideas, and then from there, prototyping and testing.
Well, it's interesting as you're talking about, I'm thinking of all the examples of the millions and millions of dollars that have been spent, you know, that I know about, right? Where systems or products are developed for the public, or even internally within the government. I know I've seen, you know, systems be built for other agencies that other agencies didn't want, need, or use, right? And so you've wasted all that money spending, you know, building things that people don't actually meet their needs. And so the part about really understanding the problem, I think, is crucial, right? Building to something that is not really the problem, lead you down a path, right? So, I mean, this is a big part of the customer experience space, right? And when people start looking at how do you capture the benefits of design or of customer experience, and then you just dig into the design piece of it, you can see where the money that you save building the things that really solve the problem is one, and then building for all of the different communities. I mean, you mentioned personas. And so if you really look at who you're building for and the specific services that you're building, you know, there's horror stories about people building wireless apps for people who don't have broadband and that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've definitely been brought in on projects where one team has developed a product for another team without actually talking to them. And of course, the other team's not using it. And part of that is that it doesn't meet all of their needs. And then the other part of that is that there's a resistance because it hasn't been developed by them either. And I'm sure it's the same case all around the world where teams are creating services for the public, and it's not having the intended impact that they want it to have. And part of that is not fully understanding the end users, the citizens or the businesses that services are intended for. And I think the private sector, those that do really well, have been using design thinking for quite some time in understanding all the different types of customers that they have and the type of experience that they want to create for them. And now in government, especially for you guys in the States, around service design and service delivery and service excellence is huge there. And one thing that I think people don't always recognize is before you create that service, you want to do that upfront design thinking component of it, where you're understanding all of your different end users before you identify even what the service is going to look like, and prototyping and testing it before starting to roll it out completely.
We also have a lot of, there's a lot of research that's been done recently about how underserved communities don't receive the same level of service that others receive, whether that's like limited English proficiency or accessibility or you know, low income or limited bandwidth, whatever, all those different groups. I mean, this is a way. How do you see design playing into that? It seems like a way for people to bring those communities into the process, right, early on.
Yeah, it is a great way to bring those communities on. Some of the different types of work that we do in organizations is in IT departments.
Mm-hmm.
And as solutions are being created, there's going to be more and more focus here on accessibility. And so bringing in what are the different types of users, even if it's products internal to government, especially if it's products internal to government, sure that they're all accessible. And making sure that we're taking all the different types of end users into consideration. The beauty of design thinking is it is iterative. You just need to make sure you're creating the space and the time for it.
Right.
And so oftentimes when we work with organizations, we have the conversations up front about who are your different types of end users. And then as we start to develop personas and talk to those end users, we might realize that maybe those folks aren't actually our end users, and then come up with new end users that we might not have thought of before. But taking that time to even pull back and think about who we're creating this for and what they might value, what they might want, what are their expectations, what are their measures of success, really helps organizations understand what they need to develop and how they need to develop it to meet those needs.
I think most of our customer experience kind of strategists, professionals in the government space kind of really understand like the importance of this, right?
Yeah.
Where we get into the issues are people who are not familiar with it, or the people on the IT side that do the back end work. So how do you work with the technologists? Because, you know, like I said, my limited understanding, I mean, service design includes both the front end and the back end, right? And so these two have to work together. We've spent a lot of time prettying up the front end, but until you fix the back end, it's not truly a transformed service. So what are your What are your thoughts on all that?
Oh, I love that. My background's actually in technology. So I spent a lot of time in software development and design and in IT management. And my favorite type of work is actually working with business and IT organizations to make sure that folks are on the same page to start out with. So we spend a lot of time on alignment before as a team and making sure that we're all looking at the challenge from the same perspective before we start in on even the persona component of it. And certainly looking at things from an end user perspective helps align the team a lot more. I know we did some training probably about 7 or 8 years ago to a team of 12 people. And so they had IT and business people together in a government organization. And in some of our training, especially in our certification, if it's customized, we do it specifically for that group and we work on their challenge with them. And so on the day one, we asked everybody what they thought their challenge was. And they all sounded like they were working on different projects. And so like at lunchtime, I went to
That's a really fascinating like story, actually.
Yeah, it happens more frequently than you might think. For that particular training, I actually went to their leader at lunchtime and I asked, like, is there the wrong people in this training? And they're like, no, they're all working on the same project. It took until day three for us to realize that they were for them to start talking in a way that helped us understand that they were all working on the same project, and probably until the fifth day to realize who was on whose team. And so how people look at things is based on their background and their previous experiences. So when you bring in IT and business, they're coming in with different things on their mind. And also some of it is a terminology component of it, is how they phrase stuff, how they look about at the world. And when you focus both of them on the end user, then it's a way to bring them together and to create that common language as they move forward. I have to say my interest in design thinking got piqued when I was in a large organization heading up a part of the IT. I spent 6 months pulling together multiple businesses to create a state-of-the-art solution. And then it took 2.5 years for people to start using it. And that's because I didn't look at things from an end user perspective. I didn't spend that time up front getting to know who this was going to be delivered for. And then the worst part of it is after 2.5 years, I moved to another part of the organization and I had to use my own tool, but with a different lens.
That's right. Right.
It was horrible. And at least I could call up the team and go, hey, by the way, I am so sorry. I didn't think of these things that you guys might want to incorporate it in, and they could change it up, but that doesn't usually happen. And it was a really humbling experience. And I think that that was before design thinking became popular. And so it actually really got me thinking about, I really have to look at things from an end user perspective before embarking on things.
You know, some of this is just, you think about it now, once you're enlightened,
yeah,
it's common sense, right?
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you don't build a house and then, well, I guess some people do, you build a house and then you see who's going to buy it. But it's even better if you let people, you know, choose the floor plan of the house and, you know, what they really need in it. So I think there's some good examples. I mean, even just design, I find fascinating, because when you think about, you know, and I've heard stories about door handles and shower handles and, you know, all different things where people just don't even take the time to test out the way that they're used in your everyday life. Any other good stories to get people like thinking about how does design work? I mean, there's things around doors opening a certain way and, you know.
Yeah. Those are really great examples of, not thinking about it from that end user perspective. The doors where you're supposed to push, but they still have the handles throw me off a lot of the time. Private sector organizations have done such a good job of thinking through their end users' perspectives. One of my favorite examples was a number of years ago, I went to Nordstrom with a friend of mine, and I was trying on shoes. And every pair of shoe that I tried on was super comfortable. I'd walk around and walk around and I think, oh my God, this is amazing. And then I walked a little bit further with one of the shoes and all of a sudden it started to feel really uncomfortable. What I'd done was I'd moved to different flooring. And so they had tile in a particular part of the store, the shoe section that I'd walked into. And then I walked back into the carpet and I realized how cushy the carpet was. And what they'd done is put in extra foam underneath it to make it feel like any type of shoe was going to be comfortable. And
that's so interesting.
Right? Isn't that so smart? And for women, if you can find, for anybody, if you can find shoes that look great and feel comfortable, it's a no-brainer. And so because they can't change the products, they bring in shoes from different companies. Right. They don't have their own brand. They don't have control on how the shoe is produced, but they do have control over the environment that people are going to be trying them on in and the type of services that you can provide to the people that are purchasing the shoes. And I thought that was a fantastic way of looking at the environments that your services are going to be offered in and making it as amazing as possible for your end users.
Well, and if you think about it from a design perspective and you're walking through that journey, right? If somebody coming in and needing shoes and then they try them on and then they, you know, then you've got to, they're going to be testing them out, right? So you're like fitting in your solutions, I guess, along that journey until the cha-ching, cha-ching cash register rings up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't necessarily, like, private sector is doing a fantastic job of it, especially companies that are doing really well. And just because you have the same process doesn't mean all of your end users have the same experience with it. And so mm-hmm. some things might work well, some things might not work well. And I know a lot of nonprofits and public sector organizations are really spending the time to understand and prototype and test these experiences. I know Canadian Blood Services here, their end users, they're relying on their kindness and in order to be able to get blood donations. And so they want to create the best experience possible. And they go so far as mocking up the type of environment that they would be in to make sure that the end user is having a smooth flow and they can see their contributions and also make sure that they're in a really good, healthy state as they're leaving the experience. So much goes into creating amazing experiences. And if a lot of the time, if an experience is really great, we don't necessarily notice it. It's when right. experiences are bad that you're like, oh man, that was horrible.
Well, you're here, the Red Cross. I know I've donated blood before and gotten an email or a text or something afterwards, follow up, to talk about how many lives the blood that you donated impacted, which of course in the customer experience space, you know, and we have this conversation. I mean, you mentioned terminology earlier and terminology gets us in trouble all the time, right? So if you think about the actual service that you get, the customer service is one thing, but then the experience, which is the entire process, it makes you feel good to know that the time you took to donate that blood actually helps so many people. So they are definitely here spending that time too.
Yeah. And you're going to go back because you feel like you've had that positive impact as well.
For sure. What about, I was going to also go into the prototyping and testing. I mean, I think it just makes, you know, sense that you do things on a small scale and, you know, test them out. And we had some teams when I was in the government years ago, and they came in and they even just took like a mock-up on a piece of paper out to the Starbucks. Right. And it was around getting people to sign up for like myusa.gov or something. And they wanted to show them the information that they would need or what they would to get just to feel, you know, feedback from people on, you know, how would you feel if the government asked you for all this information? And they said they only needed 5 people. And I thought that just doesn't seem right to me, but anyway, that was, you know, on a small scale, I think, you know, just to go out and get random people's thoughts on this gives you at least a little bit of feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's taking that time to think about the fact that you might want a prototype and test it. And it doesn't have to be fancy at all. It could just be, my favorite ones are the ones that are on paper, right, that are in draft format. Right. So we find that people provide more information if it is in a draft format and it doesn't look finished. And so, yeah, we want to give people an opportunity. Yeah.
And so they don't feel too bad about saying, oh, I think you should do it this way or that way, or, you know.
Yeah. But it's that mindset to create that space, because oftentimes we're in such a rush to get it out there, to complete the project, and or to even start. I would do this before fully starting up a service delivery project or initiative. But we're in such a rush to get to it that we're skipping over thinking about that end user and then presenting it to them to get their thoughts. When I spend the time for our business or for other organizations prototyping and testing, I'm fascinated by the responses that we get. And sometimes the solutions are easier than you think.
You know, it's when you talk about that, we've had some pretty high visibility blunders, right? Like think about healthcare.gov, right? And you know that, and this is like where the, you know, politics enters and people set deadlines and dates that they don't really look into, including all of these different pieces into it. And then people cut corners and skip phases. And sometimes it's better to just take that time up front and get all that input.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's really hard because we're working in systems that are based on timelines and resources that are available. It's being able to showcase initiatives on a, at least at the start, on a smaller scale, having more impact because they've taken that time to do that prototyping and testing. Yeah, that's something that I think many organizations struggle with, is creating that time and that space so that they come up with a better product that is more likely to be on time and on budget because they've done that alignment work up ahead. And that's a mindset shift, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get it, it helps a lot as you move forward into more projects. Once you've been in an initiative where it doesn't have the impact that you want it to because you didn't take that time, I think that's when the mindset starts to shift. But we work on changing that mindset before that actually happens. And when you do look at things from that end user perspective, I mentioned sometimes the solution is simpler than you think. And I remember so many times where I'd come up with super complex solutions to something and then actually present it to the end user. And they're like, well, I actually only want like 5% of what you've just created. And we spend so much time trying to get that 95% that doesn't even matter to the end users at the end of the day. And so it really helps in a way make us more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to recognize that because up front it looks like it's creating more work, but later on it's going to be a lot easier,
right,
to decide on what you need to do and to make sure that you're doing what actually creates the most impact.
Said perfectly, I think. Do you have any tips for along the way? I mean, how do you bring, you know, how do you recommend for programs to bring their customers or users in? I know we even have recently, they've started allowing agencies to pay people, you know, like the public, to get them to provide some input, also around creating effective personas. Any tips? How do you go about that?
Yeah, definitely. So maybe I'll start out with the personas component of it. I'm really passionate about it because it's so helpful. The way that organizations do personas is different. It's nice to have a persona for the whole organization that represents their end customers. Mm-hmm. I love to have personas that are specific to a particular challenge. And so let's say you're in the digital transformation space and mm-hmm. you're looking to bring in a new CRM. And so then looking at the personas based on the behavior with a CRM rather than just a generic, here are our customers, because with a persona, we want to identify what are the goals and what are the challenges. And so what are the goals and challenges with using, for example, a customer relationship management system, mm-hmm. What are their values? What are their fears? And then also, what are their expectations and measures of success? Because at the end of the day, they are the end clients and they have an idea of what success looks like. And so let's make sure that we're understanding that and understanding like what are their top three priorities and doing that for each type of end user. So each persona, and then bring that together before we even identify what it is that we really truly need to solve for them.
So would you look at maybe a person who's going to use the CRM that's kind of cynical about CRMs and, or they think they're too difficult, I guess, to use, or they're too cumbersome or complex. And then of course you're going to have end users that are like all about it. They want to make sure everything that they know about that customer is, you know, put into that. So, and they want everybody to do it. So as they work with customers, they have all that information.
Yeah. I love that. I think, depending on how you do the personas. And so sometimes we'll have personas based on how people are going to use the system, like the resistors, those right. that are like fully going to embrace it, those that don't have the bandwidth to be able to access it to its full capacity. And then sometimes we'll do it based on the type of end users that are going to be touching the system. And so, for example, like, is it an agent that's going to be touching the system, or is it the actual citizen that's going to be touching it, and then develop personas based on that? It depends on the challenge, and there's so many different ways of doing it. The key is making sure that we're looking at how people are using that right. system or that service, so that we're taking them into account. And you mentioned like places where there's no or low bandwidth, that's a huge part of it. And some people are more technologically influenced, whereas others just don't want to deal with technology at all. And there's all in between. And then it's also, are those people government employees, or are they citizens? And based on that, what's expected of them? And we talked about accessibility as well. And so making sure that we're collecting this information in an unbiased way, in a structure and a format that's consistent.
And you know, that's an interesting example that you've picked, because when I'm like literally 15 years ago, we were trying to implement a CRM at GSA in the federal government. And you talk about resistors, you know, and having people were keeping track of their information in spreadsheets in their desk. And part of their resistance was they didn't want to share the information that they had about customers in this like common system.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the mindset component of it too, is that there's a lot of shifting that is happening and still needs to happen too. The holding on to information as opposed to what can be done with that information. And,
right,
especially right now, like a source of truth data,
right?
When so many people have been keeping information in their own databases or Excel spreadsheets, and then bringing it all together to figure out, well, what's actually really happening. And when that happens, that's when we get even more improvements with one truth as we move forward. But it's getting people to shift how they do things. Sometimes there's a perception of risk as well, of too many people having access to that information too. And it really, we need to take the time to think about things from that end user's perspective. And so maybe a persona is information hoarders. right. And sometimes some of them are champions as well in terms of open data. And so understanding from their perspectives why they're doing what they're doing really helps ensure that the actual technology is going to be implemented in a way that's even more palatable.
Let's take a quick break. Do you know someone who has gone above and beyond to provide services to the American people? Well, this is your opportunity to recognize them by submitting a nomination for the 2024 Service to the Citizen Awards. To nominate a champion of change, go to servicetothecitizen.org.
Can you give us any examples of things that you've worked on, you know, in the government space that, kind of get the juices flowing for all of our US listeners from what we've worked on?
Yeah, there's different things that we've personally worked on, and there's a lot of cool stuff that's happening or has happened in the US in different departments as well too. And so we do a hybrid, and so we provide a lot of training as well as facilitation. So we've done training from anywhere from reducing regulatory redundancy in areas where businesses have municipal, federal, and for us provincial, or for you guys it might be state level regulations. And so how do we reduce some of that regulatory barriers for businesses so that they can grow and make sure that they're adhering to the different regulations, to negotiations. So government folks that are doing negotiations, looking at things from a more empathetic perspective, especially for some of our varied citizens that are part of the nation, to technology and digital transformation, to innovation too, and doing things differently to, we work a lot with one particular department on agile procurement. And so as they're procuring for all of the federal government is understanding their end users better so that we're posing challenges out to industry rather than huge list of requirements that are flexible enough so that we can get different types of solutions that we might not have thought of before, while at the same time bringing in those end user evaluation criteria too, and understanding from an end user what success would look like for them, and making sure that we're testing them out so that that vendor can provide those solutions that meet their needs in the way that they need them to be met. And so there's so many different ways of and environments to apply design thinking to.
Right.
The areas that I focus on are digital transformation, customer experience, and also employee experience.
You're singing my tune here. You know, it's always interesting how, you know, I've worked in organizations where we had like 26 countries that were involved in an association of kind of government IT people. And when you would go to a conference and you'd hear everybody talking, and one year somebody's a little bit ahead and the next year somebody else is a little bit ahead. But it's interesting how we're all kind of marching in the same direction. We've had the Department of Homeland Security here underwent a program on burden reduction, talking about reducing, like, so it was, this was on burden reduction to the public. And they had a goal of reducing burden by 20 million hours. And I think they hit 21.6 burden hours and have now have a new goal of reducing it to 10 more million hours. And that kind of connects to the underserved communities and the time tax that we all place on people in these communities by, you know, making things, by not thinking through that whole process, right? So it all ties together once you take a step back and put it all together. But it's really interesting and fascinating how you really can change lives, right? Like, you can change the lives of the public when they're using these government services by taking all these things into consideration.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's also increasing efficiencies, not just for the citizens, but internally too, because you're creating services that people are going to be using, and you're creating the impact that you want to have.
Right. And it increases efficiency, also the employee experience, because sometimes you're streamlining the processes internally, which of course nobody wants to be jumping through a million hoops that don't need to be jumped through. Right. So all of that, in fact, one of the best practices that we've found, and I know the Department of Veterans Affairs did this at the beginning of their veteran experience program, was to look at all the regulations that they have and figure out what is a law, what is required, and what's just been done that way always, right? And that was one of the ways that they were able to really help improve the veterans experience. And people overlay a process, right? Like, there's a problem happens, and then somebody says, oh my goodness, we've got to fix that. So they lay another requirement on top of it. And so over the years, there's like more and more and more requirements put in there that before you know it, it's just impossible to work through all the hoops.
Yeah.
So I love
what you
go ahead.
I love what you said, because it reminds me, like, what is law versus what people have been doing versus what's guidance. And and we've personally done a project where 16 regulators were brought together, and what people thought was law was actually guidance. And so at least one department had to shift up how they were enforcing law, because as you bring in organizations and you have conversations around the same thing that you're doing, things come up that help realize that because so many things have been tacked on, it might not actually be law. And so pulling back and thinking through what is law, and sometimes it's also what is required. And so especially for us, to hire within government typically takes a long time because there's so many steps along the way. But what's actually required versus what organizations are doing is quite different. And it's because of the perception that there has to be all these steps. But design thinking is one of the things that helps pull back and take a look at, well, what's the actual experience, and to determine whether or not things are actually required by policy, by law, by regulation, and look at it and pull out those things and make it okay for people and organizations to do it a new, different way that still is adhering to policy or to law, and make it more efficient for everybody.
We have a new, we have a new guidance that just came out called Delivering a Digital First Public Experience. And it's really implementation guidance for the 21st Century Integrated Digital Experience Act that was passed here in 2018, I think December of 2018. And if you haven't had a chance to look at this implementation guidance, it's 32 pages, but there's a lot of really good information in it. It kind of brings together, you know, the user experience, the customer experience, the security side of it, privacy. So it kind of pulls all of this together. And, you know, thinking through when you said that your focus is around digital transformation, this is around, it also focuses on electronic forms and electronic signature, digital signatures as well. And so when you think about, you know, reimagining these digital experiences, it's just obvious that you got to have a digital form and a digital signature, right? Now, you also have to keep in mind people that have technology, not maybe they're using mobile technology to, you know, a phone or an iPad or something to conduct those transactions. But anyway, I thought it might be useful if you haven't seen that.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one, but I know within Canada, we have some guidelines as well too. And what I love about at least the most recent ones is that the user experience is a huge part of it, is looking at things from an end user, a people first perspective. And I think some organizations are challenged with, how do you actually do that?
Right.
And so that's where we go in and help out in terms of helping people understand that methodology and the mindset to allow for the experiences. And with digital, not everyone is the same level of understanding around digital, same level of comfort. And so how can you design services with all of that in mind?
I know both in Canada and the U.S., we have created some organizations too that have helped. The U.S. Digital Services has helped, you know, promote this thinking across agencies. In fact, many agencies are creating their own digital services teams. And then 18F was created at GSA, which is the organization I was part of when I was at GSA. And I think Canada created a digital services teams as well. So I think, like I said, we're all kind of waking up at the same time, but there's still people who think it's going to be this too will go away, right? And my mantra is, we got to keep our foot on the accelerator, because if we don't, somebody's going to be tapping the brake. And then you've got things like administration changes or leadership changes, and you're constantly educating people on these ways of thinking by bringing your users into the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And it fascinates me how in work environments, people have different expectations that they have in their personal lives. In an environment where Amazon delivers stuff to you the next day, if not
right.
that day. And then for government services to take so right. much longer,
right.
Especially internal services as well. And so I think there's a clash of cultures that are happening that's going to push this digital first experience forward even more. It's already happening. It's already yeah. happening. But I think it's been accelerated, the digital first here, at least. Because of current events, but also we get to see other countries that are doing digital first to ensure that their countries are surviving in times of conflict, because without the digital component of it, they would not be able to survive, honestly. And so as we watch that, I think it's also a motivator to get more onto the digital first experience. Even faster.
Yeah, I definitely think what last 4 years with COVID, right? Everybody, it like accelerated the population's expectations because they were learning how to use the technology. Plus the technology matured over time. So I know it really pushed us by leaps and bounds here in terms of not just in the government, but on the private sector side too, things that you could do that people figured out how to do that you couldn't do before.
Absolutely, yeah. And an area of interest for me that I work with another colleague of mine on is digital physical transformation as well. There's so many sensors out there and around us that I think governments have an opportunity to leverage and also to consider how they might need to regulate them. And so while we have digital transformation going on, we actually still need to pay attention even more closely to the physical components of the world that are bringing in all this data and information that we can have access to in order to create better services, but also in order to create better policies. So how do you bring in digital and physical back together again? And like in our personal lives, I know at least in the US, there's a number of states that have self-driving vehicles. Whereas we have the technology here, but it's not as prevalent. So as we're thinking about within the public sector, how can we use and how can we regulate these technologies that are actually in the background collecting all this ambient data? So it's very fascinating because it's that convergence of people and technology together to make sure that we're creating better lives for our citizens. And I think municipalities have been doing it for quite some time with smart cities and things like smart agriculture are really taking off here too. But it's now that we have all these technologies and we're looking at it from a digital first experience, what are some of the other information that's being brought into us through other means?
I haven't really, that's interesting. Cause I mean, we've talked about smart cities here, but I hadn't really kind of pulled the threads on bringing the like sensors and the physical and the digital together to create better lives. Anyway, that's really interesting conversation. I know also you've written a book.
That's right. Yeah. I have, a book called Future Proofing by Design. And so it's creating better services and teams in the public sector through design thinking. It is available on Amazon. With the book, my intention was to help reach more people that can understand the design thinking methodology and mindset and just to see where it could help them out. And we go through the different phases of design thinking in the book and also showcase examples of how each tool in the phases can help them. And at each chapter end, we have an example of how it can be applied to one problem throughout the book so that you can see how design thinking works end to end. And then the last chapter is on service design. And the way that I see design thinking is a precursor to service design. Service design, like you mentioned,
right.
has a front end component of it, but also right. the back end. How do we actually right. make this happen?
Yes.
And helping people understand that you need to look at things from a people the end user perspective first, and then think about the services that you're going to be creating so that you can save time and money, as well as create the type of services that people are going to be happy to use, and it's going to create the impact that you wanted to create.
Well, I can't wait to get my copy. And I know, you know, it probably is a really good book for people just really learning, you know, learning design and all the phases and kind of walking you through. Is there anything else you want to talk about today?
Yeah.
That we haven't covered?
One thing that we've been working a lot on right now is our deeper clarity method. And so this is a methodology and mindset that's based off of design thinking, but we've incorporated some things that have really helped the organizations that we work with. And so with design thinking, we start out with the empathize phase, but in large organizations, especially teams that are cross-functional, so they have members from different teams, especially in digital transformation where you have IT and business working together, and then the end customers, we put in an additional step at the front to make sure that the teams are all aligned and speaking the same language right from the start before even going and talking to end users. And then as they're talking to end users, thinking about their end users and then their end users' end users. So what's really fascinating is oftentimes in government, we're working on large systems that are meant for internal use, but at the end of the day, it's for citizen impact. And so thinking right through that impact a little bit more and thinking through what is our environment going to look like in a few years? Because right now we're looking at current problems and the current state of the world and technology. What's it going to be like in 2 or 3 years? Especially as we've had some technology coming in that is completely going to change how we work and live. It's thinking through those things because a lot of technology transformations take multiple years, especially for large organizations. And so thinking a little bit more into the future and incorporating some aspects of behavioral insights into there as well too. So it's called deeper clarity. And so it's to help organizations get alignment and clarity into their end users and into what it is they need to do so that decisions are a lot easier to make at the end of the day. And that's what we want.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it sounds so easy, but the difference in terminology used by lots of different types of people or different functional areas causes lots of disconnects. And so I think it's important to, you know, to include that in the beginning of it, right? I do a lot of, not necessarily training, some training, but you know, speeches and stuff and different workshops. And we're always talking about, you know, customer service versus customer experience versus user experience. And I almost feel like people might think you're trying to be, you know, talk down to them, but they don't realize how important it is to have that clarity around exactly what you mean when you say it so that it doesn't get confused, or, you know, you don't get confused later on. So I think that's interesting.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, because we see that often when organizations are looking at their strategies, like what's included in customer experience, what's included in employee experience, and differentiating the terminology up front is going to make it so much easier and actually reduce the amount of work that you're going to do. And I talk a lot about that, especially today too, because when one thing means so many different things to so many different people, mm-hmm. then you're creating this huge package. And at the end of the day, what was meant by the team that created it was something so much smaller. And so if you're able to make sure that the team agrees on what needs to be created, then your life is going to be a lot easier. And I think more organizations are looking at measures of success at the onset. And so that's what we focus a lot on in deeper clarity is getting the team to agree on those measures of success. We work in teams where there's three people and we've asked each person to come up with their top three measures of success and then totaled them up. And in a group of three, we had 8 measures of success. And so already in a small group, they're at the start misaligned on what success looks like to them.
Right.
And it's super easy to align them by having those conversations up front so that they're all making decisions to make sure that they're getting to that measure of success. And I think that's something that in organizations that are cross-functional teams or from people with different backgrounds, it's easy to think success looks like something different if you haven't had that upfront conversation and if you haven't focused on that end user impact. And so we want to spend as much time as we can with organizations to help them understand the value of that and set up for success right from the start.
Yeah, understanding what success looks like from the beginning and bringing the cross-functional teams together, you know, is critical. I mean, I always said, if one person thinks success is driving to California and the other one thinks it's driving to Maine, you know, you just need to have that conversation. So I applaud it, you know, the work that you're doing up there. And if someone is interested in learning about design, I know you've got your book, anything else you would recommend to people who are really, say they're the person who has designed that system, and then they just like you were, and then they went on the other side and they're like, oh my goodness, I should have done something else, you know?
Yeah. Well, if you can reach out to that team that's taking care of it. We certainly do a lot of training around design thinking and deeper clarity. We do it virtually. We do it in person, as well as having asynchronous training, especially for the public sector around design thinking, if you want to understand it at a high level. Mm-hmm. I think practicing it as much as you can really helps out. The Future Proofing by Design is a great book for people that like methodology, mindset, and tools to be able to start using it in organizations. And I think the other thing that I really recommend people do is talk to others in the public sector that have done it and to understand how they did it and the impact that they've had, where they've had some challenges, where they've had some success. And I'm super happy to talk to folks as well too. They can check out our website, springtoinnovation.com, or reach out through info@springtoinnovation.com. But at the end of the day, it's about looking at things from a people perspective. And so if you could start thinking about who your end customers are and actually talking to them, I think that's a huge shift in traditional project management. And so that's what I would love to do, is to reach more people and to help them with that alignment and looking at things from an end user perspective.
I agree. And we have a lot of examples here of using like voice of the customer and design and understanding issues, like you said, that are like low hanging fruit. I mean, one example was at the VA, and they found out that one of the biggest problems was people couldn't navigate the medical center, and they had volunteers that wear red coats now that help escort people around the medical centers. And it's like totally changed people's lives, because you've got, you know, people of all different, you know, ages and disabilities or whatever coming to those medical centers, and they're huge. And so helping them navigate that. So there's many more examples like that, but I think it's important to know that you can identify through design thinking, voice of the customer, and understanding your customers and what their problems are, and come up with some solutions that have, you know, lots of benefits, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the public sector, a lot of services are internal,
right,
and to other government departments as well. Right. And that's still applicable. You still have end customers at the end of the day. In a weird way, I find I can't take off my design thinking hat. And I've had people say that a lot too, is once you see it from a design thinking perspective.
I was going to say the same thing. Like, once you see it from a customer, that you should include customers. It's like, did you ask customers? Did you ask people? you can't go back.
Yeah, absolutely. Even in my personal life, sometimes I'll even go into a grocery store and start like, or healthcare too, is start redesigning it in my head from my perspective. But until we get those folks as clients, we can't help them out as much. But it really, how you approach a service as a senior versus someone that's still a student, it's different.
Right.
How you think about the world is different. The type of services that you need are different. And the types of services that they need on the near horizon is quite different as well too. And so if you're delivering services internally within government, thinking about who your internal clients are, and if it's external, the different types based on their behavior might also include the different phases in people's lives.
Well, I could go off on that because we're doing a lot of life event projects right now, but right, I think we've just one last, you know, anything else you want to, you want to talk about? If not, we're coming to the end of our time.
I think that's really good. Just if folks want to know more about design thinking or our deeper clarity method, feel free to reach out. I'm always happy to chat and understand some of the challenges you're going through and see if there's any ideas or suggestions that might help improve your environment.
And we'll put your contact information in the description. So
awesome.
Thank you. Thank you again for doing this.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It was a fun conversation.
It was a fun conversation.
Thanks for listening to the CX Tipping Point podcast. We would love to hear from you. If you have a chance, please rate and review, hit subscribe to keep up with the new episodes, and pass it along to a friend. And in the meantime, follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and tweet us at Doris Consulting.